Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened radio show.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's hump day, halfway through the week. We're Wednesday. And getting over that little kind of a hill in the middle of the week and starting that long coast down into the next weekend and heading for Powhana Friday and everything. A lot of stuff to talk about. If you want to join us on the air, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. To lead off the show, I told you that Hillary was not out of this race yet. Apparently, we are getting reports that eight of the superdelegates who were pledged to Barack Obama have been under intense pressure by Hillary supporters, lobbying, phone calls, faxes, offers of fruitcakes, I don't know. But they have, as of today, apparently switched their support back to Hillary. And what this reveals is, and this is what I said was going to happen, she is still thinking she can pull the nomination out of the convention and be the candidate for president. So she has not gone away, and she is still playing the game, and she is still convinced that it's really her nomination, and to heck with what the voters think. So, you know, she has, she has not thrown in the towel. She put her campaign on hold. That was the dead giveaway right there. She has not quit. She is still trying to finagle, beg, borrow, and steal the nomination, for the Democratic Party going into the November elections. So, you know, it isn't over until the saggy lady sings, and she's not singing yet. And who knows what she's going to try and do to wrest the nomination away from the People's Choice here. Turning over to the wars in the Middle East, we've got a lot of stuff here to talk about. Apparently, unable to kick off a new war directly with Iran, the United States and NATO are attempting to kick off something with Pakistan, and there are some border clashes going on there now. Apparently, there have been some 150, they're calling them insurgents, killed, who were fighting on the border between Pakistan and Afghanistan. And it just seems like, they're trying to kick off a new war to just get the fighting going anywhere they can. And obviously on the far side of Pakistan is Iran. Now, an interesting little story, and this is something for those of you who know somebody who, because of the economy or a seriously misguided sense of patriotism, is considering enlisting in the military. There's an interesting statistic just came out today. Apparently, some 8,763 veterans have died while waiting for their benefits from the U.S. government. So the bureaucratic resistance delays from the Veterans Administration have killed more American soldiers than the Iraqis have. These are guys who came home from the war. They were seriously injured. They had medical issues. They needed help. They didn't get it, and they wound up just dying. Apparently, they died before their cases could even be reviewed for the additional payments that they were due. And apparently, there's a huge backlog, and they're saying, oh, it's paperwork, paperwork, paperwork. But you know something? When you create a society that is loaded down with tons of paperwork, the whole point of it is to delay things. And, we just saved a bunch of money. They went ahead and died without us. How about that? Hey, great. We can put in a new officer's golf course or something. Now, apparently, a little surprise announcement today, in a reversal of the stated policy of never negotiating with Iran, apparently a U.S. envoy, top-ranking diplomat, is going to attend international nuclear talks with Iran on Saturday. And a lot of people are scratching their head. What's going on? Is it just posturing by the United States to look like they're peacemakers before they stop dropping the bombs? And yes, that's possible, because they did that with Iraq right up until the bombers took off to go strike deep inside Iraq. The U.S. was still trying to pretend like they wanted peace and they wanted to negotiate. But there may be another wrinkle here. Remember, a couple of days ago we reported here that Iran and Russia signed this huge natural gas deal. And what this means is that an attack on Iran now is an attack on Russia's strategic interests, because Russia is going to be getting a lot of natural gas from Iran. And they're not going to want to see that interrupted. And it may very well be that Russia has sent a little back-channel message to the United States saying, okay, if you attack Iran now, you're attacking Russia. Sort of a reversal of the Kennedy Doctrine. If you attack anybody in our area, it's the same as if you attack us, and we will respond in kind. That may be the message. So one possible interpretation of this envoy going to meet with the Iranians is they're going to negotiate some kind of posturing where the U.S. gets to call off the war but not look like they gave up. Iran will do something to make it look like they are complying with America's demands regarding the nuclear power station. Maybe they'll suspend enrichment and buy their fuel rods already pre-processed from Russia. Or they'll do other some such token situation, and the U.S. will say, see, we solved the problem with diplomacy, and we're going to go back home. And we'll continue playing with, we'll mess around in Pakistan, because that allows us to go on soaking the American taxpayers for all the money we need for bombs and bullets and stuff. But we'll stay out of Iran, and we'll just make do with Pakistan. Okay, it's like how President Johnson made do with Vietnam rather than going back into Cuba and risking World War III. So it may well be that as far as the U.S. government is concerned, that war with Iran has now slid off the table. Obviously, this may not sit very well with Israel. That could very well go ahead and bomb Iran's nuclear power plants in order to kick off the war, or worse, stage a new false flag attack to try and kick the wars off that way. And I am convinced that Israel would not at all object if the United States and Russia were to enter into a mutually destructive nuclear war, which would destroy the United States as a superpower, would destroy Russia as a superpower, and pretty much leave Israel and its nuclear weapons and the implied threat from those nuclear weapons pretty much in control of the rest of the Middle East's oil. I don't think Israel would mind that one bit. So we've got to be very, very careful here, because war with Iran might mean war with Russia. And some of the people who are in there trying to get this war going don't care. And our Congress, who's invested in all these defense stocks, I mean, they'll make money whether we win the war or we lose the war. If we lose the war, they'll just take their money and they'll move someplace else. And they'll live out their retirement in South America or Asia or Australia or some other place where they don't have to look at the destruction and the radiation and the rest of it. They'll have their money. They don't care if we win or lose. They make money regardless of what the actual outcome of the war is. Anyway, now Ron Paul did this wonderful little speech in which he said, the U.S. is trying to use a crime from 14 years ago as part of their justification for invading Iran. And they're talking about situation down in Argentina where a Jewish community center was bombed. And the U.S. is trying to imply that this was Iran and Hezbollah who did the bombing, and therefore, because Iran and Hezbollah are suspected of bombing this Jewish community center in Argentina 14 years ago, that the U.S. is now justified in invading Iran. Well, there's a couple of problems with it. First of all, if anybody has a right to take offense, it's going to be Argentina, and they're not. And more to the point, Argentina itself thought that Syria might be behind the bombing, and there was even a cover-up there that involved the Argentine president who had links to Syria. So the bottom line is, we don't really know who did the bombing in Argentina. But once again, we're supposed to just say, oh, yes, it was whoever the government tells us is the bad people, and we're going to send our kids and our money over there to stomp the place flat, because that's the American way that we do things. So, bomb, 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 Iran, for mom, apple pie, and the flag. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back with your phone calls, 866-582-9933, after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And normally I don't comment on our advertisers, but this last one about the seeds, my reaction to that one is I'm probably going to go ahead and avail myself of their services because we've been watching this genetically modified stuff that's getting out from various companies. And they're going in with what are called these Terminator genes, which are genes that make it impossible for you to take seeds from this year's crop in order to create next year's crop, which is, you know, that's what's worked for farmers since the beginning of the agrarian phase of human development 50-some-odd thousand years ago, that we think, that agriculture began. And now all of a sudden we're supposed to say, nope, licensing issue. If you grow crops, you can't use those seeds to grow new crops. You've got to go buy seeds from the company. And the problem is we are already seeing some pretty bad mistakes with this technology being rather recklessly allowed into the wild without proper testing. We know for a fact that pollen from genetically modified plants is harming beneficial insects. There was an article in Nature magazine about monarch butterfly larvae succumbing to this. And here in Hawaii, normally we're supposed to have a lot of monarch butterflies. And I remember when we moved here about 10 years ago, we saw a lot of them. And this year, and maybe it's just because it's cooler, but I think I've seen one so far this entire summer. And that's very depressing because I like butterflies. I think they're cool. So having some seeds stashed away and away from contamination, maybe a good common sense kind of thing to do. Anyway, enough of that. I want to move on here. Yesterday's guest on our show, Bradley Smith, we got a huge amount of email from that. Most of it very supportive. Some of it, well, frankly, obscene. And basically saying, how dare you question the Holocaust? I'm never listening to your show ever again. And, of course, my response to that is, well, I'll miss you. So... go have fun. Go listen to Rents or something if you want fairy tales and mythologies. But I got quite a few emails regarding a part of history which I sort of was aware of, having heard about it a little while ago, but not really paying much attention. And it's called the Holodomor. And this, it was an intentional program of genocide by starvation carried out by Stalin in Russia, and it was part of a program to coerce the farmers in the Ukraine region to join the collective farm program. And those farmers who did not surrender their own personal property to the collective farm program, their grain and crops were simply seized by the Central Soviet, and nothing was sent back into the region, and ultimately some 10 million people died, of which 3 million were children. And when the Soviet Union collapsed and records were unlocked, huge, vast amounts of documentation of this was found. And I know bad things happen when governments get out of control. We saw it happen in Germany. We saw it happen in Cambodia. We saw it happen, well, everywhere. I mean, if you really study history, you'll understand that genocide is actually, unfortunately, sadly, very common. This one killed 10 million people, and it happened, you know, some years after the close of World War II. And yet, the point that the emails were making, and it's a valid one, we never hear about it. There are no movies about it. We're not taught about it in school. It's like somehow these 10 million people aren't important, don't really matter. But, you know, they're just a throwaway. And it really underscores the fact that our state-sponsored schools and our political lobbying organizations and our corporate media are hideously biased in their presentation of history. Because only these people as victims are important and to be lionized and acknowledged and promoted, if you will. And these others over here, they don't matter. It's unimportant. It's irrelevant to what we're trying to accomplish today. And it's like this idea that the Nazi horrors, regardless of whether you think it was intentional genocide or simply everybody dying from typhus epidemics as the infrastructure collapsed there, a lot of people were in those camps, not just Jewish people. There were gypsies. There were gays were in there. You know, we always hear about the little six-pointed star that Jewish people were supposed to wear. That was not the only emblem the Nazis put out. They also put out pink triangles and stars in other colors, and they were all to identify these various subgroups. And all of these groups, most of these groups, wound up in the labor camps. Gays, mentally retarded people, you know, gypsies, just anybody who wasn't considered Aryan, whatever the heck that meant. And when the typhus epidemics came along, a lot of them died. Horribly, horrible tragic death to die of typhus. But why are we only hearing about one particular group? And why, when we have a very clearly documented genocide by starvation, which is one of the cruelest ways that you can die, is simply being starved to death. At the end, your body's trying to eat itself just to stay alive. 10 million people, 3 million of them children. Why don't we hear about this in our public schools? You know, the more I think about it, the more I realize we're being cheated because we're not getting a complete, correct picture of the history of the world. We're only being spoon-fed certain key events that are politically expedient, and we're expected to just completely ignore all the others. And I don't think that's being honest with history. It's certainly not being honest with our students. You know, we never hear about the horrors of Nanking in our schools. You know, war is terrible. War screws over everybody. There's another word I'd put in there, but this is radio. Why are we only hearing about this one particular set of instance and circumstance? Why don't we hear about these other horrible things that happened? Why aren't we hearing more about the things that the U.S. and allies did to the German soldiers after the war was over when they put them in camps and starved them to death? Why don't we hear about that? We want an honest history, and we know history is being distorted. The fact that we don't get taught about the Holodomor and these 10 million people being deliberately starved to death, if we're not being taught that in the schools, that right there proves we're not being given an accurate picture of history. It's being distorted and spun to serve political interests. And the whole point of this radio show and the whole point of my website is we don't want distorted history anymore. We want facts. We want truth. We're tired of spin. My wife started calling me her truth fairy, and I said, I don't think I can use that because people might wonder about me, but maybe I'll use it after all. Anyway, we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. Turning to the local domestic scene here, President Bush once again is shouting executive privilege. And he's saying executive privilege because that allows me to say you're not allowed to talk to people about the leaking of Valerie Plame's identity to the press. And Bush invoked that privilege. Now, a little reminder here. There is no such thing as executive privilege anywhere in the Constitution. It does not exist. Nobody's ever taken a test case to the Supreme Court to get a ruling on it or not. It was originally supposed to be a courtesy to allow the chief executive a little bit of latitude in getting certain things done. It was not supposed to be a shield to prevent the checks and balances. It's not supposed to be a means to thwart the oversight responsibilities and duties of the United States Congress. So, possibly in what may be a case of the worst timing that I've ever seen, Nancy Pelosi has announced that even though there will be impeachment hearings, she will not allow there to be an impeachment vote at the conclusion of those hearings. So you're probably wondering, well, if Pelosi is going to prevent an actual vote on impeachment in the House, why have the hearings? And the answer is because she wants certain members of the Democratic Congress to look good to their constituents for the November elections. She wants them to be able to go back and say, I worked toward impeachment. I tried as hard as I could to impeach George W. Bush for lying this country into a war, but darn it, we just couldn't get the votes and whatever to move forward on it. So it's really just for show for the elections. And I got to tell you, as we get closer to the general election, I'm going to be spending a lot of time supporting Cindy Sheehan in her attempt to wrest Nancy Pelosi's congressional seat away from her, because in my mind, and I get a lot of emails supporting this same idea, Pelosi she's a traitor to the country. She is one of Bush's chief enablers. The American people took Congress away from the Republicans and gave it to the Democrats on the implied promise that the Democratic Congress was going to investigate how we got lied into these wars and they were going to punish the people who were appropriately guilty. We've got the Red Cross saying our administration is guilty of war crimes, and Nancy Pelosi is saying no investigation, no impeachment, we're not going to do anything. Well, Madam Speaker, that makes you equally guilty. That makes you an accessory. So, Nancy Pelosi, you too are guilty of war crimes. And if there is justice in the universe, we're going to see Nancy and W and all of these other neocons lined up in the docket at The Hague, and they're going to be looking at hard time. They're going to be breaking up big, huge rocks with tack hammers for the rest of their life. Anyway, the other news is that Nancy Pelosi has announced that Democrats, and again, this is posturing for the election, they are considering a new round of stimulus payments to the American people. And it's rather amazing, because you need to remember, it's not like these guys are reaching into their own wallets to pull this cash out. This is your money they're playing with. They just reach into that big treasure chest that they have loaded up with your tax dollars. They take out a few coins and they dangle them in front of you saying, if you vote for us, we'll give you back your money. That's really what it is. And it's almost insulting how little they're talking about, because even if it's another $600 check, that's not going to materially affect any of our lives. It really isn't. I mean, the people who are getting those checks, they go out and they have a little splurge, and they go right back to the fact that they're struggling to keep their homes. They're trying to meet their credit card payments. They're trying to keep their cars. They're trying to keep food on the table, gas in the gas tank. They're trying to pay for medical care that they can't get. And the U.S. government thinks that if they just hand you another check for $600, you're going to forgive them for allowing us into these wars. You're going to forgive them for running our economy off a cliff, all for this little tiny pittance of a payment. Now, I'm not saying don't take the check and cash it. Yeah, I mean, any money you can get, grab it, cash it, spend it, have fun. But don't sell your soul out that cheaply. Remember, it's not their money they're giving you. It's your own money they're giving you back. And next year, on your tax return, they're going to take it back anyway. So it is at best a loan. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, the only thing that will save our economy, it is still possible to save it. Take a lot of work, but it is still possible to save it. And how you do that is you end these wars that were started with lies. You shut down the war machine, and that would allow you to slash federal taxes by 50% across the board without giving up any services that we have right now. And I'm sure if you're looking at your little accounting system right now, you'd realize that if you were only paying half those taxes, that would give you enough money to try and build up your business, to start stimulating the economy in a way that's really meaningful. Not by going to Walmart and buying another piece of Chinese electronics to make China richer, but to start local businesses that provide local jobs that make local products to sell and possibly export to reverse the balance of trade. That's how you save this economy. But as long as we have this leech called the war machine, the military-industrial complex, fastened onto our jugular veins and sucking the life out of us like some bloated, gorged vampire, we're not going to turn this economy around. And the people who are getting rich off the war machine, they don't care. They don't care. As long as the money is pouring into their pocket, they won't care how many people lose their homes and their jobs and their medical care and their insurance and their cars. They don't care. It is not in their nature to be concerned with other human beings, or they wouldn't be where they are in the first place. So this new little stimulus package is not going to make a darn bit of difference. It will take a 50% reduction in taxes across the board to rescue this economy. Anything less is just showboating and grandstanding for the elections. Now, speaking of the economy, I don't think we've seen the bottom of it yet, and one of the reasons is a lot of people are in coast mode. And what do I mean by that? There are people who have jobs that are not necessarily 9-to-5. And the particular example here is I talked to some friends here locally in Hawaii who work in construction. And they still have work. They have enough work where they can't file for unemployment. But it's fewer and fewer hours. They've got bids out. Very few people are bidding. So they've got a little bit of work. They're working maybe 2-3 days a week instead of 5. And so they're not considered unemployed by the unemployment department, the Department of Labor and the rest of it. They're not considered unemployed. They're not counted as unemployed. But they're not making enough money to support their overhead, and they're slowly going further and further and further into debt. And so they're coasting. They're coasting downhill. And they're invisible because they are working enough to not file for unemployment. And there are a lot of people in a lot of industries who are doing that. They're not working as much as they used to. And they're going deeper and deeper into debt until finally they hit that point where they can't sustain their debt load, and they're going to go under. Then they'll be considered unemployed. And then there'll be a statistic. And then there'll be some politician who will say, well, golly gee whiz, that's really terrible for them, and if you vote for our party, we'll try and fix it next year. It's more platitudes. Anyway, meanwhile, women are apparently turning to pole dancing to raise their money to live on, which I think is very racist, because why not the Czechs? Why not Hungarians? Why not the French or Spanish? Why only the Poles? I think it's racism. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Thank you. up everything in life. But I guess that's the way it goes when you're the Antichrist. He's aroused by all things evil. That's why he wants more war. When he gets to the other side, maybe he'll wonder what it's all been for. He's George W. Bush.
And aloha, America. Welcome back. And it looks like we're going to end this show on a little bit of a high note. We have some breaking news. The Guardian in Great Britain is reporting that in a turnaround of policy by President George Bush, the United States is going to reestablish diplomatic relations with Iran. The U.S. plans to establish a diplomatic presence in Tehran for the first time in 30 years. The announcement will be made next month to establish a U.S. interest section, a halfway house to setting up a full embassy. The move will see U.S. diplomats stationed in Iran. Well, I got to tell you, somebody somewhere blinked. And I'll tell you something else. Over in Tel Aviv, there are ashtrays and other small appliances hitting the walls right now and a great deal of cursing in foreign languages, because this does signal a tremendous turnaround in policy. And this does touch on what we mentioned earlier in the show about the envoy meeting with Iran about its nuclear program this weekend, possibly being linked to Russia's signing of a natural gas deal with Iran, which would really make war with Iran extraordinarily risky for the United States. Now, this is not, of course, going to rule out some of the more fanatical and hallucinated leaders of the world from trying to kick off a war with either a false flag attack or some other such dramatic situation. But for Bush to officially be reconnecting or reasserting diplomatic status with Iran does indicate that the administration and the U.S. government has had second thoughts about launching a new war in Iran. And you know what? It's kind of interesting. Earlier I made this comment about how Johnson bought off the war hawks who wanted a new invasion of Cuba by letting them go play in Vietnam. And that may be exactly why, as Iran becomes no longer invadable, that the U.S. military has been told to go play in Pakistan for a while. And it may just be that simple. As long as they have somebody to bomb and kill, they'll be happy. And we can let them go do their stuff. But this is very significant. And I said the Guardian has just reported it. It just came over the net during that last commercial break. So, cross your fingers. It's definitely a good sign. Before we get any further, though, I want to say special thanks to Ethan for twiddling the dials and feeding the little hamster that's in the back of that little wire cage in the back of the mixer board. I don't even know what the name of the hamster is. We've got to name that hamster. We're going to have a little name the mixing board hamster contest out there. Anyway, getting back to the last bit of news here before the end of the show, and that is exciting what the Guardian is reporting. That's really very good stuff. And getting back to the local economy, as we probably know, we seem to have, I'm getting messages from our, okay, that's the name of the hamster. Okay, caught me off guard. I changed context, and I wasn't sure if he was talking about a caller. Apparently, the hamster's name is Richard, so that's your headline story for tomorrow. Anyway, we've seen in this country this, it's almost a joke that the rich are always going to get richer and the poor get poorer. And if you ever get a chance to really hang out with the rich, sometimes it can be a little bit startling just how much money they seem to have. And you keep wondering, in a society where the tax codes are supposed to be taxing the rich a little bit more than the poor, in order to pay their, what is termed to be their fair share, but it's just a case of, you know, who are we going to gouge during this administration. It can be a little bit amazing when you realize how little you're living on and how much some other people really seem to have. Well, it turns out there may be a reason, along with Bush's tax cuts for the rich. It turns out that a lot of the very rich people in America have been playing little games with foreign banks, and that is about to come to an end, because a bank computer technician in Liechtenstein basically decided that he was going to out the U.S. citizens who had secret bank accounts in Liechtenstein for the purpose of hiding money and not paying taxes on it. So it will be interesting as these rich tax cheats' names become public. And it will be very significant if we never find out the names of those rich tax cheats also. But we will be looking to see if any of them are these hypocrites who insist on Americans paying their fair tax share, and then we find out that in point of fact, they've been sort of stashing a little bit away for themselves to allow themselves to live their exalted lifestyles. Anyway, turning to science, as longtime listeners and readers know, I have been very skeptical of the claims of global warming, of rather human-caused global warming. Yes, the globe gets warmer, the globe gets colder. That's what the fossil and geological evidence shows. The world is always changing. It never stays the same. And I decry the global warming cultists as attempting to take something that happens naturally and spin it for political gain. In the current case, the imposition of a carbon tax, a carbon footprint tax, a global warming tax, whatever you want to call it, it is an excuse to take yet more money away from ordinary working people, ostensibly to repair the planet that they have damaged with their wasteful lifestyles. And the science has never been there to back it up. We've had people on our show before who have confirmed that many of the temperature sensors used to prove that the world is getting warmer are positioned in the exhaust from air conditioning units. One of them was positioned next to a trash incinerator. Golly gee whiz, no wonder the numbers are going up. But apparently some scientists have come out with some peer-reviewed, which means other scientists have looked at it and said, by golly, they're right. And they've come out with two of these papers that are about to be published. And it shows that carbon dioxide emissions in the atmosphere actually cool the atmosphere, not heat it up. That the mechanism is quite easy to understand and was overlooked by the people who are in a rush to say, ooh, carbon dioxide is bad, and you all exhale it and create it in your cars, so therefore you must pay for it. And the second paper is basically documenting how the IPCC overstated carbon dioxide's effect on global temperature by about 2,000%. In other words, a factor of 20. And as probably anybody who's living around, you know, the world, you know, knows from firsthand experience, the Earth has actually over the last 7 years gotten just a little bit cooler. It certainly is here in Hawaii. Yes, there are going to be hot spots here and there on the planet. But overall temperature, as near as anybody can tell, is actually starting to decline. And it may start getting cooler because we are starting a new solar cycle. But we are not seeing an increase in sunspots, which means the energy being given out by the sun is remaining low. And regardless of how you feel about SUVs, the fact remains that the primary determination of Earth's temperature is the amount of sunlight it is receiving, or the amount of energy it is receiving from the sun. And if the sun is putting out less energy, we're going to get colder. And unless we start seeing an increase in sunspots very soon, we may be looking at a new and hitherto unexplained phenomenon of the sun, one which may even go a long way to explaining the periodic ice ages. So meanwhile, of course, Al Gore is out there screaming, no, 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 it's all CO2's fault and it's all your fault. And the only way you can atone is you've got to buy and sell carbon tax credits through my brokerage. And he's out there screaming and crying because his great plan to make millions and millions of dollars off of your guilt for carbon dioxide is starting to fall apart. In fact, there was an article we ran this last week in which it was observed that the enthusiasm for biofuels probably has set a record in terms of how quickly it has fallen from political grace over these last couple of years. All right, we're done for today. Tomorrow we are going to have Dick Allgaier on the air with us. He's a local news commentator, very, very much plugged in, very sharp. Going to be talking about some of the local economy indicators that we are seeing here in Hawaii. Friday, of course, is always going to be open phone. And Saturday, we're going to be talking to an Iraqi veteran who has moved back here to Hawaii and what he has to say about the reality of the war. So until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, and Aloha America.